earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey-oh. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey-oh.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yaktidishe Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Oh, can I want to talk with you to all of our relations?
Within secret ways, we needed no one to show us how to pray. No need of guilt. Shame. We had no devil. We preached in Jesus' name. Until the Christians came. Until the Christians came. Thank you.
Songwriter Dennis Harrison. The song is entitled When the Christians Came. That was recorded for the Songs for Justice Project, which include Dennis Harrison, Gabe Horn, Ted Williams, Diana Osborne, Betty Hurst, and myself. And I know many of our listeners have also heard one of the other CDs we have recorded entitled Free Peltier, which I'm sure we will feature in today's broadcast as well. Ashkwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Today's program is entitled Thanksgiving Day Blues. We focus on the frustrations many of us Indigenous peoples experience living in America, the home of the brave, land of the free, as a result of racism and the serious misrepresentation of United States history in our Indian nations. This is especially emotional during the so-called holiday of Thanksgiving, during the month of Espescas Acas, the period when ice forms on the margins of lakes and streams, what Americans call November, we Native Americans must deal with many racist stereotypes and Hollywood images still forced upon us. The lies and misrepresentations of history between the white man and Native peoples continues to be one of the most serious issues and frustrations to us indigenous peoples throughout the world. Today's program, we will also feature a discussion with my Native American brother, Gabe Horn. The American holiday of Thanksgiving exemplifies how white America has no understanding of the true history of relations between my tribal peoples and European settlers. Sadly, school children as well as the general public are still taught that the pilgrims were friendly and kind to the Poconoket Wampanoag they met at the place we call Patuxet, now called Plymouth, Massachusetts. This so-called holiday of Thanksgiving is still represented as a time when pilgrims and Indians got along as so-called friendly neighbors. This holiday continues the myth that the early European settlers did like Indians. It totally misrepresents the truth that the Puritans considered my ancestors as savages and heathens. The pilgrims' religious fanaticism and hatred of my Indian people were manifested in many, many ways. They are never taught in school or spoken about during this Thanksgiving Day holiday. As long as this Madison Avenue advertising fiction continues, true understanding and healing will never occur between Indian people and white America. Several examples highlight these truths about pilgrim settler behavior. The first example, white history portrays the arrival or landing of the Mayflower as a time when pilgrims happily greeted Poconoket Wampanoag Indians. The truth is, Poconoket Wampanoag Indians did canoe out to the Mayflower with gifts of fresh food and water. What is not often honestly acknowledged is the reaction of the pilgrims. It was very violent. Military commander of the Mayflower, Miles Standish, responded to the Indians' generosity with an order to the ship's men to fire their muskets at the Wampanoag canoes. This was followed by several boat landings of armed Puritans and their attack dogs who tried to pursue the fleeing Indians who had come in peace and friendship. This aggressive behavior on the part of the pilgrims against Indian people occurred on the very first day of contact in what is now called Plymouth Harbor. There was not any so-called real cooperation or friendship between my people and the Europeans. This attitude of racism toward our First Nations peoples continues right up to the present day. We see this in the names of sports teams and mascots. We see this in the disrespectful names of commercial products like Crazy Horse Beer or video games named Custer's Last Revenge. We indigenous peoples of the Americas continue to suffer racial discrimination by groups one might be surprised to even think of, such as academia and environmental conservation organizations, as example. Native peoples throughout the world must continually fight against racist attitudes that disrespect sacred sites and even the freedom to practice our spiritual ceremonies. What about so-called Columbus Day, that holiday that pays tributes to a whole era of conquistadors in the indigenous Holocaust of the Western Hemisphere that followed? What about the many battles over our Aboriginal rights for hunting and fishing that are challenged by anti-Indian groups, even in this day? Tragically, the list goes on and on. Today's program will talk more on these issues. The second example I will mention is the myth, Puritans as they're called, came to the so-called New World for religious freedom to escape their persecution from England, and that when they settled in Patuxet, Plymouth, they were very cooperative with my Indian people. History miseducates that the Puritans were respectful and tolerant of our Indian cultural spiritual ways. It is very important to note that Puritans had been welcomed in Holland to practice their religion. They had a thriving community in the Netherlands for at least 12 years prior to a group of them sailing to the so-called New World. The reason why a number of Puritan families left Holland was to fulfill a belief of their leader priest, who ordered the Puritans to become missionaries. In other words, to bring the Word of God to the so-called New World. documents show that their original plan was to voyage to join Captain Smith's colony in what's now called Virginia. At that time, white racist, so-called religious settlers, were stealing land from and fighting the indigenous Powhatans. They, too, were thought of as savages and heathens. The Mayflower and another sister ship encountered bad weather conditions in the Atlantic. This sister ship floundered and eventually sank. The Mayflower took on those Puritans who survived the loss of their other missionary ship. As we all know now, the Mayflower never made it to Captain Smith's colony. Instead, wind and sea currents brought the pilgrims to the coastal Poconoket Wampanoag territory, now called Plymouth, Massachusetts. One of the most tragic and serious consequences of this landing was the history of persecution and slavery by white settler colonists. The real American holiday of Thanksgiving originated when colonial men massacred many hundreds of unarmed Indians that were holding our annual green corn harvest ceremony in a place we native people refer to as the Great Green Marsh or Great Green Swamp, a place now called southeastern New England. This massacre of peaceful native men, women, and children happened just a few years after the pilgrims landed in 1620. This act of murder on the part of white colonists was considered so great and successful by colonial fathers that it was decided to commemorate this massacre every year on the anniversary of that attack. The colonial governors declared annually to celebrate with a feast, thus the origin of Thanksgiving. Last but not least on this subject, United States history does not tell how first early missionaries, such as Reverend Elliot, were responsible for slavery and genocide. Reverend Elliot, a so-called man of God, established some 20 native prison camps he called prayer towns during his time in what's now called New England. His Puritan fanaticism was focused on forcing his Christianity upon Indian ancestors. Many Wampanoag, Nipmunk, Narragansett, Shawmut, Norumbegas, Natick, Tonkapog, Wamisset, Kachichuit, and other Indian peoples were outright killed for not converting to Christianity. Those who did not escape these missionary attacks were captured and forcibly placed in fortified camps called prayer towns. Many were also rounded up at gunpoint and placed on coastal prison islands, such as Deer Island in Boston Harbor or Block Island in Narragansett Bay. Those who did not die from that ordeal were then shipped off as slaves to the West Indies. As many Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices worldwide listeners know, I had the opportunity to work as a cultural historian, interpreter, park ranger for some 4 years in the 1980s for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and also with the U.S. National Park Service. I researched many colonial Indian relations, such as settler forts and battle sites. I will never forget the large wall painting in the United States Post Office in Natick, Mass. It is a large mural of Indians in chains and leg irons being marched at gunpoint to one of Reverend Elliot's so-called prayer town site in South Natick. I imagine this painting is still proudly seen on the wall even now in 2004. What do those white citizens of Massachusetts think when they see this depiction while standing in line to mail their Thanksgiving packages? Most of my Wolf Mountain radio programs since our first broadcast in 1979 have tried to provide cultural history in a way that not only promotes respect for indigenous peoples, but also serves to build coalitions between native peoples and non-native society. I try to speak in a friendly way in a manner that encourages good feelings between everyone. Our Native American culture teaches us to try and speak good things about each other, as we are all part of the great mystery. Words should not bring hurt. However, in today's program, it is somewhat difficult to speak about racism and the anti-Indian movement without strong emotion. I think our worldwide listeners need to hear my honest feelings about historical and contemporary racist relationships between indigenous peoples and white society that are still prevalent all over the world. I think our worldwide listeners also need to hear other indigenous peoples' feelings about these relationships as well. White supremacy in many forms sadly still plagues our planet. It is now 395 years since the first permanent English settlement in America when Captain James Smith established a fort on Jamestown Island in Powhatan Confederacy territory. I have visited this place located on the south side of what's now called the James River at the mouth of Gray's Creek. While I was there, all I could think about was how Captain Smith often kidnapped Indian children as hostages for ransom. I also thought about George Percy, the second in command of that English colony, who led troops to attack Indian villages. He and his soldiers murdered native men, women, and children, and burned down Indian lodges, as well as their cornfields. There was no mention of these things at the nearby state park at Chippahoke's plantation. Thus, indigenous peoples of Turtle Island, North America, Tunapasagmanoa in my language, so-called Thanksgiving Day is considered a national day of mourning. Many times I've had the honor to take part in the traditional annual gathering with Wampanoags overlooking Plymouth Rock and a replica of the Mayflower. While I am now residing in Pahayogi, Everglades, Seminole Miccosukee territory, my spirit heart is always with that Indian drum at Patuxet on so-called Thanksgiving Day, 384 years after those pilgrims washed ashore at Plymouth Rock. Since 1974, the American Indian Movement honors Indian country with a gathering on Alcatraz Island known as the Day of Unthanksgiving. All over Indian America, we traditional Native people honor our ancestors with prayers as we remember the true history of the war against Mother Earth and indigenous peoples. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yacht Kiddushi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinawantakwisin, to all of our relations. music from Peggy Vermette. That song is entitled Lies, an appropriate description of the white man's version of history over the past 512 years here in what's now called the Americas. That song was from our friends at Turtle Island Music, their CD of contemporary Native American singer-songwriters. We are now going to listen to a conversation I had with my brother Gabe Horn when we visited together a few days ago, right after Thanksgiving. As most listeners to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices know, Gabe authors and educators in Indian Country. In addition to serving on Yat Kitishi Native Center's Council of Advisors, Gabe and his wife Amy are close personal friends to Betty and I. We are brothers in spirit and brother warriors. Gabe and I first met 12 winters ago when both of us were speakers at a national Native History Conference, which focused on the true history and legacy of that colonial pirate, Christopher Columbus. Since then, Gabe and I have worked together on projects to defend Mother Earth, Native rights, and social justice. One of the most appreciated Wolf Mountain radio series by our worldwide listeners is the 7-part Native Heart interview on Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices I did with Gabe Horn. We are very honored to share another conversation with Gabe Horn in today's program, Thanksgiving Day Blues. I again encourage all of our worldwide listeners to read Professor Gabe Horn's excellent books. They include Native Heart, an American Indian Odyssey, published by New World Library, a 4-book Native People, Native Ways series entitled The Native American Book of Knowledge, Book of Change, Book of Wisdom, Book of Life. These are excellent writings for all ages, published by Beyond Words Press. And one of Gabe's newest books entitled Contemplations of a Primal Mind, published by University of Florida Press. Gabe Horn was also editor of Wisdom Keepers, a very fine book about Native American spiritual elders. Please listen now to my conversation with my brother, Gabe Horn. Aho, Kinawatakwasin, to all of our relations. We are here in the home of two very special close friends of ours, and many of our worldwide listeners have had the pleasure of listening to my brother and sister share their Native Heart. I'm going to just ask my brother to talk a little bit about some of his recent travels, his speaking presentations, in behalf of Mother Earth and all the relations. Kanan Wontakwasin. So, welcome to Wolf Mountain Native Radio, sir.
Thank you, Ines. A few weeks ago, my wife and I traveled to Washington, D.C., where a book I had written called The Great Change, which is a children's book, was being honored at the Kennedy Center. And I was asked to give a special reading. I didn't want to go because Washington is not a place I would really like to be in, and it was right after the election. So there was this state of depression in our house anyway. But leaving home is always a difficult thing, but I know that this is a time when the last thing we need to do is surrender and be quiet. And we need to seize the opportunities to put out through words, through art, through anything that's creative that we can, that power into the world, the power that helps to bring the balance back onto this earth. And so we went to Washington, and I was so totally amazed at the hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands of people that came to the Kennedy Center. But what I was more amazed at, and what my wife Amy was equally amazed at, was the diversity of people that we saw. People of all colors and kinds that are beyond even imagination now when I think about it. I know that that I was so moved to see parents with their children in their arms and at their hands, and grandparents and uncles and aunts walking with children into the center to be introduced to books and to introduce their children to books. of all cultures. They came from, these books come from all cultures from all over the world, and I was just fortunate that The Great Change was one of the ones that was being honored there. And what we noticed is that there was, it was like a there was this quiet this quietness that pervaded the crowd almost, and I think it was because this was a group of people that you could tell, because of their love for their children and their love for culture, that's why they were there, that had felt disenfranchised themselves after the election. And I think that this coming together of all these people was an affirmation of this spirit that is emerging and that is not dying in this world, and that it was an affirmation of this spirit of love and cultural interaction. And so it was an incredible time for us, especially a moment, you know, for me to be with these children and to hear names like Bashia and Osama and Rainey and just the diversity, Hakim, the diversity of names of the children that asked me to sign books for them was amazing. As a matter of fact, I made a chant out of their name to represent this world that is emerging, that is our children. So it was a wonderful experience in that way, and I think on the flight home that Amy and I were both moved to tears to have been a part of it and to see this connection, this family connection, not only to mother and child and father and child, but the greater human family that came together there. It was quite an experience. Oh.
I would say thank you, sir. Earlier today, the four of us were talking about a very special book written by a Japanese scientist about water, but more from a spirit sense, and how water is an element that reacts to emotion, especially human emotion, and that if you have feelings of peace and feelings of kindness, then the crystals of water will also form well. If you have hatred or anger or disrespect, then either the crystals won't form or they will be unhealthy. And the subject that we were talking about as it relates to this is that while I think the four of us as Native American people are appreciative that this book has been written, what is sad is that even though it's a bestseller in America, these are understandings and knowledge and wisdoms that indigenous peoples of what's now called North America, we have known from our very beginnings, and that this understanding and what in English is called philosophy is expressed in our songs, in our prayers, in our teachings. And yet it seems that the Wampisikatonk, the people from across the waters, what we say the European American people, the white people, seem to be unwilling to really listen to indigenous knowledge and wisdom, but will accept something if it's called science or if it's written by someone from a totally different nationality than North American. And I'm very particularly ticked off about this. I know many times you hear environmentalists talk about Thoreau and Walden Pond and the Maine woods and how, philosophically speaking, the philosophy of American environmentalism stems from this great European thinker, when in fact, in reality, most of what Thoreau learned and what he wrote and expressed actually is indigenous wisdom from my own particular people, the Wabanaki. It was actually a traditional Penobscot spiritual leader, Mr. Polis, that for whatever reason befriended Thoreau and took him around what is now called Walden Pond and taught him about the animals and plants and the spirits of how we honor Mother Earth. So the point I'm making is that in this day and age, it is still almost impossible to get knowledge heard, like lectures, by indigenous peoples. It usually has to be usually a European American, so to speak. Do you have any comments on this, Gabe?
It's almost like a form of censorship. it's like if you give credit to this knowledge to the people whose land you occupy, then how do you justify your existence in this land, living the way you live? And I think that by censoring the knowledge, it isn't even a conscious thing. Emerson talked about it in the 1800s when he said, "Thy love afar is spite at home." And the idea is that Native people have been aware of the communication between plants and trees and humans and the growing life forms of the earth for thousands of years. We've been aware of the life that is water, that is the spirit of water. And it's available, this knowledge is available in the orations of our people going back hundreds of years that have been recorded. Black Elk wrote a book, or had a book that was written. John Fire Lane Deer. We have our literature that is available, but rather than utilize that literature in an environmental class or a science class where the knowledge is equally advantageous and important to this, the welfare of our lives, It will be censored. It will be ignored. It's like if it ain't white, it ain't right. And the thing is that what I see is that Europeans, or Americans in particular, have pretty much robbed other cultures, taken, stolen from other cultures, and somehow came up with the idea that these ideas that they have are their own. And they're not. And even today, when you have a book like this, it's just a wonderful book, I've been told, and it sounds like a wonderful message. And I applaud the man, and I honor the man who wrote it. But that it can become, say, a bestseller in the United States, when other books by Native Americans or other information that Native Americans have available is ignored, it's a kind of arrogance. And it is an arrogance, and it's not honoring the place where you live. And you can never be a part of the land or a country or this place if you don't honor the people and the spirits of this land and the knowledge of this land from whence you walk upon. So I understand that honoring Native Americans would rock the foundations of this country, because this country was founded on genocide. And so, if Native Americans are respected and honored, if the knowledge of Native Americans is respected and knowledge, then who can justify that genocide? And what democracy can be hailed as a great country and great democracy if it has, in fact, committed this genocide? So, I think that it doesn't surprise me that when we go to conferences, or even on this last Thanksgiving, where an alien god is thanked, our mother or this turtle island that we live on, not the great mystery, certainly not the native people who develop much of the foods and medicines that are utilized in this country and throughout the world. This is just simply the way it seems to be, and until it changes, America is going to live in this illusion that is falling apart, even as we speak now.
You, Amy, Betty, and I, along with House Kitty Makwa and Ixtazi the Wolf, are here in your home, some 384 years since the Pilgrims on that colonial Mayflower ship washed ashore at Patuxent, now called Plymouth. To me, this was one of the early beginnings of the anti-Indian movement that is still fighting indigenous peoples in North America. This is a serious concern that many of us in Indian country worry about. Most non-Indians have no idea about the growing white supremacy anti-Indian network that specifically targets Native peoples. While some Americans may be a little aware of racist groups like the Klan, the skinheads and neo-Nazi hate groups, most mainstream Americans probably have not heard of racist groups like One Nation United or Citizens for Equal Rights and Responsibilities or PAR. These and other groups are now very well organized and very well funded. This anti-Indian movement is a network with members in most every United States state and Canadian province. Yet, Kitishu Native Center has been monitoring their virulent expansion across the United States and Canada as part of Radio for Peace International's Stop Hate Radio campaign focused on the growing international white supremacy movement against people of color. I mention all this because recently I've been listening to many of my fine white friends who seem to be very, very shocked and surprised about the re-election of people like President George Bush, Vice President Dick Cheney, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, and others of the Bush-Cheney administration. My friends express a disbelief about the type of character and behavior of these United States leaders and their domestic and foreign policy agenda. My response to my friends is basically asking them, why are they surprised that America is waging war in Iraq, or why are they so surprised that the U.S. government is secretively expanding their exploitation of energy and natural resources, most of which, by the way, are on tribal lands? What about the Bush-Cheney administration's minimizing or doing away with important laws, such as the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, Endangered Species Act, NAGPRA, the Native American Graves Protection Repatriation Act, or OSHA, Occupational Safety Health Acts, as examples? From my point of view as a Native person, this abusive mentality against Mother Earth and policies that negatively impact poor people and people of color, like us American Indians, are not any different from the behavior that has been characteristic of most white America towards Native Americans since first contact between us. I would not be surprised, as example, to learn that some ancestors of President Bush or Vice President Cheney were greedy pioneers who killed American Indians in their frontier time. White supremacy arrived in 1492. It is still a virulent disease that is spreading. Until white people in North America, and actually throughout the world, better respect indigenous peoples and face up to both historical and contemporary racism against Native peoples, there will be no peace between Euro-Americans and Aboriginal peoples. Gabe, I'm wondering if you'd comment on this. It seems to follow a recent talk you presented at the University of South Florida, where you entitled Righting the Wrongs, A Perspective of Primal Wisdom, that challenges the ideologies of Western civilization from the writings and reflections of Gabriel Horn, and that was at USF Tampa Library, not too many days after this so-called Thanksgiving Day holiday.
Recently, I was at the University of South Florida, and I was discussing my books, and I was reading from Native Heart, and one of the pieces that I was reading from was talking about how shocked Americans were when they discovered about the My Lai massacre. And I remember how people seemed so appalled, and how one TV anchorman called it America's worst moment. And I'm thinking, hadn't these people ever heard of Sand Creek or Wounded Knee or the burning of the Pequots in by the Pilgrims in New England? Don't they know any of their history? And that's what the whole point, that people who do not learn their history are forever doomed to repeat it. And so I wonder, even, you know, now we see this, it just the cycle continues, and we see it continuing. And I know that during a 60-minute broadcast this year, there was a young woman who graduated from Yale University, and she wrote a book on the skull and bones of this secret, strange order of the very elite, the rich elite at Yale University. And what she said is that in the skull and bones building, which is very secretive, that they house the head of Geronimo that was stolen by the great-grandfather, I believe, of the President of the United States. And that it's taken out for certain strange rituals that they have. And when I heard that, I thought, how would they feel if we had the head of their grandfather in our home or in our clubhouse and used it for strange and exotic rituals? And I think that these, you can, like you were saying, you can trace this mentality back all the way to the pilgrims, you can trace it back all the way to the conquistadors. It's that same mentality of superiority, of ignorance, of separation from earth and sky and the rest of humanity. It's the same mentality that created a god in its own image and gave themselves the right to take whatever they want to take. And it's that kind of mentality that whenever it arises in human history, is always falls apart. And it's inevitable that it will fall apart again. And the sad thing is that as we see history repeating itself, we see our relatives, the dolphins and the whales and all the beings of the sea. We see our brothers, our relatives, our brothers and sisters of the air. We see the forest nations and the plants, and we see all these beautiful beings that have to suffer because of this mentality. And that's why we have to take the responsibility never to surrender our beliefs, that the earth is our mother, that we have a responsibility to her and to our species. Because I don't want our species to go down in history as the exploiters, the cancers of the earth. I know that many of us have mutated and become cancers on the earth. But I want to help our species along with other people to be a progenitor of beauty and of goodness and of balance so that our species can be somehow remembered in the mystery in that way.
Yeah. You are listening to Yatkidichi Native Center's Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
The music you just heard prior to our program identification was the American Indian Movement's honor song. Dennis Banks, American Indian Movement co-founder and AIM National Field Director, told me when he spoke at a free Peltier event here in Southwest Florida, co-hosted by Yatkidichi Native Center and independent Seminole representatives Danny and Bobby Billy, that the AIM song was originally sung at the funeral of traditional elder and spiritual leader Mr. Raymond Yellow Thunder. That honor song was then gifted to the American Indian Movement. As many listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio have heard, Mr. Yellow Thunder was a victim of white racism. In a cold Nebraska winter night, while trying to get gasoline at a good Nebraska gas station, Mr. Yellow Thunder was brutally assaulted by a number of white men. He was publicly humiliated by making him dance naked and forced to drink alcohol in front of a crowd of white men at a United States Veterans VFW meeting hall. Severely beaten, Raymond was left to die in a trunk of a car by those racist white men. When the Yellow Thunder family requested the local police to investigate the murder, the police did little, if anything. To the white townspeople, Raymond was just another dead Indian. The Yellow Thunder family requested help from AIM in trying to get justice for the murder of Raymond Yellow Thunder. Those white men who were responsible for the death of Raymond were found not guilty in the so-called American justice system. This case is just one of many in the history of Indian-white relations, of racism and white supremacy. The lies and misrepresentations of history taught by white society continues to be one of the most serious insults and sources of disrespect to Indigenous peoples throughout the world. We at Yatkidichi Native Center hope people will learn the true history of what occurred in the Americas and around the world from first European contact to current situations facing Indigenous peoples worldwide. This is the purpose of our Wolf Mountain Native Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. Peace and honest friendship between cultures will not occur until the truth of manifest destiny is acknowledged and white supremacy and colonialism is ended. I also want to thank today's program guest, my brother Gabe Horn, for sharing his thoughts. I encourage all of our worldwide listeners to read the literature of Native authors, such as Professor Gabe Horn's excellent writings. My brother's writings include Native Heart, an American Indian Odyssey, published by New World Library. Gabe wrote a four-book Native People, Native Ways series entitled The Native American Book of Knowledge, Book of Change, Book of Wisdom, Book of Life. These are excellent writings for all ages, published by Beyond Words Press. And one of his newest books is entitled Contemplations of a Primal Mind, published by University of Florida Press. Gabe Horn was also editor of Wisdom Keepers. As I mentioned in our introduction, we are honored to have Professor Horn as a member of Yatkidichi Native Center's Council of Advisors. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time for today's edition of Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We conclude with the song Still Strong, from AIM co-founder and national field director, Mr. Dennis Banks. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio on Global Community Radio, Radio for Peace International. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, kenawantakusin, to all of our relations.
And so I say to America, I want you to remember our past. This past will give you direction for the future. Just as our people in our past, we are the spirit of the future. The spirit of this land lies rooted in the history of Native people. The massacres that happened to us, the army that came, took our land and killed our people, did not destroy our vision for a strong future. We are still strong, America. We never weaken. Like the spirit of Chief Joseph, we are still strong. Like the spirit of Geronimo, we are still strong. Like the spirit of Crazy Horse, we are still strong. America, we are strong people. Like the spirit of Peltier, we are strong today. As we were thousands of years ago, in the pages of history, we are strong. We were born strong. Our spirit is strong. We are still strong. We are still strong, America. Look about you and look at the Anishinaabe people. Look at the Lakota people, at the Dene people, pushed around again in this century, pushed off our land, trying to take yet what remaining area of land that we have left. But we will not lay down, America. We have never laid down in the face of struggle. We shall never abandon our past, nor shall we ever abandon the spirit of our people. Like the spirit of Chief Joseph, we are still strong. And the spirit of Geronimo, we are still strong. And the spirit of Crazy Horse, we are still strong. And all those who went before us, knowing that the seventh generation down the road would remember them, we are still strong, America. We are still strong, Anishinaabe people. And when we look at the Sac and Fox and the Winnebago, north to the Eskimos, south to the Cheyenne, and to the Arapaho, and to the Tulalip, to the Ojibwa people, we are strong. And I want every book about Native people to be truthful, to tell the truth of what our people did, to tell the truth of who we were, and that we never laid down. And I want the history books to remember us as being a strong people. We are strong. Mother Earth gives us that strength. Our grandmother, the moon, gives us that strength. Our oldest brother, the sun, gives us that strength. The forest, the deer, the buffalo, and the elk give us that strength. The winged thing, the eagle, the hawk, and the owl give us that strength. And as I look about this world in the four directions, I see the many colors of humankind. I see the many colors of people, and that's what makes us strong. That's what we believe in. That's our love. we are still strong. In the spirit of our people, in the spirit of our ancestors, gone long ago, we are still strong. And just like an eagle flying high, a reminder to the four directors that we were born strong, we are strong, and when we leave this world to go to the spirit world, we will leave behind a culture and a tradition for the seventh generation. We will leave them the stories and songs of our people, of our struggles, of our ceremonies, and of our women. And when we leave them, we will know that they will be strong.